Right. Yeah. Great. I mean, if you don't mind, I would love to take some people's time and thoughts around, the stakeholder engagement strategies that I tossed out there during the presentation. Again, that's everything from listening sessions to, leveraging existing processes and stakeholder forums, to additional meetings on drafts of documents. I'm sure many of you have experienced, successful and unsuccessful stakeholder engagement processes. And so I'd love to hear, other ideas. Also, are we on the right track? Are we not at all on the right track? We all recognize that we have not been successful in getting everybody to the table historically, and it's going to be really important to us to try to change that trajectory. So I'd love to open it up there if anybody has thoughts.
I'm gonna start asking questions if you will. A question I so when Becca showed me the community engagement strategy, one question I had of her was, you have everything in there. So she's got like all the different elements of ways you could do the engagement strategy. In-person listening sessions, out in the community, Zoom. So just I think my advice to her was, pick some of those that would work best. And I said, but the best people to ask are the people who are going to be coming to your sessions, which are some of the folks on our call today. So it'd be great to know from you all which of those kinds of approaches you find works best for you or the communities that you work in. That would help us.
I have a quick question before people start giving some feedback. Who are you intending to come to these sessions? Are you thinking people that work in municipalities? Are you thinking of just any community member? What's your target audience?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we need to make sure that really anybody impacted by the strategy is able to engage, which I just want to say is pretty much everybody. The technical sessions that we've had thus far, I think, have been highly successful in getting folks that it's their day job to work on specific energy topics. But everybody else that maybe, is busy with other things, that does include municipalities, that includes, even other state agencies haven't necessarily been able to join those technical sessions. But like anybody who's part of the general public, environmental justice groups, maybe a great way to get to some of the community members is through religious organizations. I don't, right? I'm very interested to hear from you all what has been successful, because unfortunately, I mean, pros and cons to this, the comprehensive energy strategy really does touch everybody because it's the energy strategy, which means that we really need to make sure it's accessible to everybody.
I don't know if there's a follow-up to that, but I do also see Shannon's hand up. But I want to if there's a follow-up for that.
Rebecca, go ahead and then I'll jump in.
No. I just think Kathy had a follow-up. I don't know, Kathy, if you had a follow-up. Okay, go ahead, Shannon.
Yeah, I was going to note that specifically with respect to getting increased participation from environmental justice groups or residents of environmental justice communities, I think that providing support and funding for those groups to engage is really critical. I know I've heard from a number of allies from environmental justice groups that they feel like finally state agencies and other entities are asking for their input and engagement and processes, but they often just don't have the bandwidth or the resources to engage. And so I think a parallel discussion should involve how the state can actually provide funding and resources for those groups to meaningfully engage in the process.
Samantha?
Oh, hi, thanks. I would ditto what Shannon just said. That is absolutely necessary. And the other suggestion I'd make is not to necessarily rely on meetings that you plan and invite folks to, but look for opportunities to engage where environmental justice groups have their own gatherings, be at community events, farmers markets are pretty much shutting down now, but places where members of the community are gathering, and in order to get input. You'll have to design input differently, I think, than you know, this kind of forum. But just some suggestions, you know, that have been ones that work for, we have found work for us.
Thank you. You can continue that. And I think Adrian said you also are interested in this, but I wonder like if folks have questions, comments for Adrian as well and discussion.
Well, I do have a comment. In terms of working with the community, I totally agree that we need to structure things so that the people who are carrying our message and the people who are attending our meetings are in fact remunerated for their input. So we're going to work with Sustainable Connecticut. I don't know if you all know that organization, but they are very, very grassroots oriented. And I'm hoping that they will be able to help us as part of our strategy in terms of reaching out to the community to raise some funding, get the organization of these meetings, both where people are and also use, you know, really effectively the tools that are available to us. But the funding, we have very purposely gone out with the BRBC to seek funding to do this so that, you know, we can really, you know, afford to pay for someone who is specialized in outreach, but also give them a budget so that the remuneration of those who are participating with these different kinds of tools and reacting to our different suggestions about the plan, are in fact remunerated. And I really would like to have a network of neighborhood captains. It's kind of a silly name, but it kind of describes what I'm thinking about, so that the message can be actively carried to specific neighborhoods. We always have a tendency to run to the agencies we know. So, you know, right away you're running to Alliance for Community Empowerment, which is the old ABCD in Bridgeport, which had such huge tentacles. They are an agency that can be extremely helpful because they run all the daycare programs. They have their energy program where people get energy supports, which means that they have like something like 35,000 clients. Now, not all 35,000 are going to be Bridgeport residents because they have a larger footprint than that. But we can certainly reach the parents through other programs that, you know, are designed for their kids, but reach the message for them. We can reach folks who are coming into the energy supports, you know, talk about energy burden. Well, that's where you can really talk about it when people are coming in to get their subsidies for the winter and for the summer. Then, of course, we have the outreach to the neighborhood revitalization zones, of which we have 7. In Bridgeport. So all of that is part and parcel of getting down to the grassroots. But I would also suggest that working with other agencies, I'm thinking of MetroCog, for instance, because they are above the city level, but no city is an island. So all of the efforts of planning that we put into place are going to be interactive with Trumbull, Stratford, and Fairfield, and Monroe, and Easton, all of whom are our immediate neighborhoods and are part of our region. So that's how we're looking at it. We're looking at it as how to reach out into the community, both through the community structures that exist, but also create a network that's kind of a super community organizations that exist today, and try to get input through people who attend these meetings. The PLTI system, by the way, is another one that's absolutely fabulous. If you're working in, we have something like 20,000 students in Bridgeport. So going through the PLTI is also another way of dealing with the outreach to people who would be very interested in the results from energy focused planning, because they have kids who have asthma. They live next to a coal plant. Now it's shut down, but it's still, the smokestack is still there. They are living next to the highway. We bifurcated by two highways that is, you know, big time pollution. So these kinds of issues make people very, very sensitive about, you know, what are the remedies to this and how can I be interacting with those who are proposing to do a plan for the future.
Thank you, Adrian. Christine and Andy Cog.
I had a question. I was wondering to what extent DEEP is engaging with the utilities to talk about this plan. Feel like utilities may sometimes be in, at least in my opinion, a bit of an adversarial role because, you know, maybe they're a little bit more geared towards profits and the business. They are private sector, sort of. But, you know, I guess I just wonder about, you know, things like putting a cap on community solar. Like, does that really align with our plan for the state's energy? I guess I'm just wondering what that looks like.
Yeah, no, I think you're raising an important question, right, about how we ensure that the information we're getting in and weighing in order to make this plan is, you know, equitable and balanced, right? And so the utilities thus far have been like strongly engaged in the technical sessions. Again, those technical sessions are clearly for folks that are, I guess, their full-time job to talk about energy, and the utilities fall into that category. That said, we've been trying very hard to make sure during those technical sessions there are different perspectives than just the utilities there to help balance that out. But that said, we know that we need more than just, you know, again, those full-time energy professionals to get us the full sense of what should be prioritized and what serves all of Connecticut residents, you know, appropriately. So yes, agreed. Thus far, they have been highly engaged. That's also why the stakeholder engagement process that's going to be beyond these technical sessions is so absolutely critical.
Thank you.
Nathan?
Yes, hello. I'm realizing that there's an appropriate and wonderful focus on the stakeholder part of the CES. But also that I'm assuming it's okay to ask broad questions about the CES today. Okay, great. See your reaction, Becca. I think it, you know, it's remarkable how many topics the CES is tackling this time around, and seeing that list at the beginning of the presentation really makes that vividly clear. So where I'm going here is the big picture, and thinking about the Global Warming Solutions Act or any of the efforts in Connecticut to set really serious goals for carbon emissions and how we get there. And, you know, thinking about the IRP is really key for the electric sector. And seemingly the CES is probably the best, if not only, truly comprehensive strategy we have for energy that is therefore connected to the goals of the Global Warming Solutions Act. So, and, you know, we know that in the region and other states have done Pathway to 2050. There's been efforts to really try to get into the technical questions of what do we need to do to get to these goals. And we also know that in the last legislative session that there were complaints that we're behind in reaching our GWSA goals. And there's also interest in trying to make them more relevant and current, like instead of 80% by 2050, 100%. So where am I going here? It's my impression so far, though this is the reason I'm asking, is to try to learn more, that the CES, as strong and as good as it is not really the state's planning tool to actually show exactly how we're going to get to our 2050 GWSA goals. And if it is, please let me know. And if it isn't, I just kind of want to take this moment to maybe note that it isn't quite all the way there yet and raise the question of, do we need to maybe strengthen CES or some other vehicle so that we have a very definitive plan for how we're going to get to these these statutory goals. So sorry for the long setup, but hopefully it's clear.
No, they're raising a great point, Nathan. So I will acknowledge, yes, I don't think the CES is going to be the be-all, end-all strategy, right, of how do we get there all the way. That said, I think what we have determined is that, you're right, the IRP gives a pretty good structure and process for how we're going to achieve our, you know, decarbonization of our electric system, right? And we can continue to move that forward. We have an EV roadmap that has a pretty good plan for at least some, a large portion of the transportation strategy there. And so we recognize that what we're really missing thus far in Connecticut is buildings, right? What are we doing in the building sector? And so we are very hopeful that the CES will move that forward. We're hopeful that one of the white papers this year will actually really focus on buildings and try to start proposing ways to make progress in that sector. So that's the component of the strategy that you'll probably see most build out in the CES. That said, again, it will not be sort of the be all end all that gets to tie all that together perfectly, and is not sort of the comprehensive of strategy for like we will achieve X by this year, et cetera. But at least in that building segment, we really are hopeful we will make some substantial progress so that we can, just like you said, sort of catch up with others that have a more detailed step-by-step plan for each year. And that said, of course, the Comprehensive Energy Strategy also then provides recommendations for, you know, what other legislation and programs and policy and planning efforts need to be undertaken in the next 4 years minimum, because the CES gets updated every 4 years. And so even if we're not able to achieve it in that Comprehensive Energy Strategy document itself, I'm very hopeful the recommendations will steer the next 4 years of work.
Hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate hearing all that and hearing your, you know, fairly comprehensive in a short amount of time answer to that, but also acknowledgement that, you know, we don't have that. And another question might be, do we need it? And how many people think that's important? But for the moment, I hear how the state is trying to do the most important thing in the right timing for what we still need, which of course is buildings at this point. So thank you, Becca.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then Nathan, what we do have is the modeling that was done prior to me coming into the Office of Climate Planning, which was how to meet our 45% reduction goal by 2030. At this time, you know, we haven't looked at like an update to that modeling, but that is the existing plan that does say in order to meet our 2030 goal, these are the reductions that we have to have. Although, that was before we set a 2040 zero electricity, and that one still uses a 66% reduction, which we've already met. So we're way beyond that one, which is the good news. So I just want to note that the timer went off, and hopefully it's not going to go off right in the middle of me speaking. So I would say, if you want to do quick comments in the chat, maybe one more question, and then we'll definitely take more written comments. And I think there's a lot more to talk about here as we look towards 2023, because I'm about to go back in the big room, talk about next steps for overall all the working groups.
If I could, I'm Lyle Scruggs. I'm at University of Connecticut.
I think it's going to go off.